Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk Podcast with Charlie Romeliotis, James Naveau. I am Pat Boyle. On this episode, it's all about the introduction of Luke Richardson as the 40th head coach in Chicago Blackhawks history. I go one-on-one with him. We talk about, you know, some of his priorities of talking to Kane and Taves early on. What does he want the identity of this team to be? And, you know, some of the coaches that have shaped how he plans to be as the Blackhawks head coach. And then a little bit later on, we'll discuss Kyle Davidson and his pursuit for a first-round draft pick and the future of Derek King and the sensitivity of one Charlie Romeliotis. It's all coming up next on the Blackhawks Talk Podcast.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk Podcast. James Naveau, Charlie Romeliotis, Pat Boyle with you. We're coming to you, some of you, via our YouTube channel. And we have our water bottles, and we're all drinking from different companies. We are still looking for that title sponsor for the podcast. So if you're interested, you too could have a beverage or whatever your company is, a little coolie situation.
Pitch us.
A mug.
Yeah.
You know, just call the sales department. And,
we come NBC, fairly cheap, so.
Chicago. A lot about in this podcast, it's all about Luke Richardson. Named the 40th head coach in Chicago Blackhawks history on Wednesday. Introduced at the store on Michigan Avenue. James, we haven't got your official take on the hire. Your initial thoughts on Luke Richardson being the next head coach?
Well, I think the Blackhawks have said that they wanted to go with a guy who could potentially be here during both the rebuild and when they're good. They also wanted a guy who's going to be high character and is going to build a good culture around the team. And I think that the way they've been speaking about Luke Richardson, he certainly is a guy who's going to check those boxes, right? And that's kind of the sense that we got during his introductory press conference today. That's the sense we've gotten from different people around the league who have spoken to him. And Kyle Davidson even alluded to that today, that to a man, nobody has anything bad to say about Richardson. And I think that with the parameters that they had set, the type of guy that they wanted to bring in, that's pretty much exactly what we got. It was a very transparent process. There was no real surprise to it. They didn't pull a fast one and hire a Bruce Cassidy or a Barry Trotz. And so I think that they laid out those parameters and that kind of framework, and that's exactly what they did. So I think that it checked all the boxes, and I'm really interested to see how that style ends up getting put together with the team that he's going to get. But I think overall it's a really solid hire.
Charlie, I'm not a big did he win the press conference guy. But I do think you can take things from it. Your biggest takeaway from his introductory presser.
Yeah, I feel like we've heard a lot about his like calm demeanor, his influence, his like natural leadership ability. And like that was on display on Wednesday, right? Like he wasn't like fiddling over his words or anything. He was very composed. And I think the one thing about him too, like when you're signing up for a longer term rebuild, which he fully understands he's getting into, he kind of understands the steps that you have to take to get there, right? Like he said specifically, you can't go from step one to step 10, right? It's got to be 1, 2, 3, 4. So I feel like you need a coach that is fully going to embrace the developmental aspect and knowing that these next few years are going to be some trying times in Chicago. So I just like the perspective that he had in his first press conference. And I'm sure Blackhawks fans he's going to endear himself to Blackhawks fans the more he kind of speaks and you see his calm approach and demeanor.
Here's what I think you can take away from press conferences. I'd like to think how said coach is addressing the group is somewhat how he's going to address his team, the front office, what have you. Maybe not all the time, but there's going to be a good portion of the demeanor that they have in that room is going to be the demeanor they have in front of their team. I was talking to Troy Murray afterwards, and he said, Pat, he's got a presence. Something that, you know, has not been here for a while. He definitely has a presence. And I think you get with the way he talks and communicates and answers questions and lays things out and doesn't seem flustered. There's a calmness about him, right? And it was kind of, and he talked about too, like, you know, I'm not going to scream behind the bench. I feel like, you know, that kind of bleeds into the team. If they see the coach panicking or losing it, they forget the game plan and all of a sudden they're more worried about what's going on in the moment. And so, you know, he definitely goes about it his way. I had the opportunity to sit down and talk to Luke Richardson, and we did that before the press conference. Right now, here's my one-on-one with the new head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks.
So in your 21-year career, do you remember a moment or a time where it hit you and you said, I want to give coaching a shot?
I don't know if I remember the one moment other than I was lucky enough to start as an 18-year-old early. I had a lot of experience early. So I guess, you know, games played, years played, coaches and organizations counted on me to be a bit of a veteran mentor and maybe play with the younger guy, but it was probably close to my same age as me, but it seemed like a younger guy. And I did a little bit of mentoring and then, you know, on and off the ice. So my wife Stephanie and I and our family always kind of were open. We'd bring the new guy to town, the young guy to town. They'd live with us for a while because we know what it's like. It's a tough world, not just playing hockey, but just moving away from home at a younger age and a new city. So I think we've probably had 8-10 guys over the years like live with us for either extended periods of times or either just training camp to get used to it. So we always took pride in that. And I think all of that kind of, you know, combined into me forming as a coach even before I stopped playing. So it was just natural when I stopped playing to get into coaching.
During the interview process, did you sense a connection with Kyle and how they wanted to build this team and this franchise?
I did, but you know, everybody asked me, how'd the interview go? And I'm like, well, I thought it went well. You never really know how the other side feels, but I did have a feeling that it was a good connection, good conversations, and I didn't really have to search for answers. I have a lot of experience in obviously we went to the Stanley Cup final 2 years ago as an assistant coach, but I also had to take over for 6 games during those playoffs, which was real exciting. But, you know, also on the developing and building, I was in the American League for 4 years as an assistant coach and did some player development early on and primarily working with young defensemen my first few years as an assistant coach, but also just young players in general, giving them hints and some ideas on how to survive in the NHL and excel, at the same time. So I think our messages crossed and blended. And, you know, I mean, obviously when I came back for the second interview and then they asked for me to come back in the next morning for a third, I was really like, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but I think that's good.
Yeah.
Then I started overthinking it that night, saying, well, maybe they're just going to have me in and say, thanks very much. You know, better luck next time. So I just tried to keep it, real and flow with it, enjoy it. And I felt comfortable. And they really created a comfortable environment to me feel comfortable to be myself. And I think they must have liked what they saw.
You look at where you started your career in Toronto, you look at playing in Philadelphia, being an assistant in New York, assistant in Montreal. I mean, those are the toughest places to either play or coach. Don't you feel that in a way that really suited you well for this opportunity? I mean, Original Six franchise, but you played in the mecca of hockey and coached there as well.
Yeah, I think it really, you know, definitely helped me and built my character for this moment. You know, I'm not afraid of a good challenge. I like it. And to be in sports is it's either a Saturday night feeling or a Monday morning feeling. Like you're at the highest of the high or the lowest of the low. And you know, I want to be Saturday night every day and be excited and, kind of everybody's talking about the team in town, not in a small market where people don't even know that you're playing. You know, I mean, that's, to me, that's not professional sports. Excitement and expectations and high demands, that's what a professional sports is about. And I grew up in that and I love it.
Have you allowed yourself to think about that first night at the United Center where you're on the bench and the organ strikes and the anthems are played, and how that compared to your first NHL game back in 1987 at the old Chicago Stadium?
I still have chills in the back of my neck from that. I'll never forget that moment. And every time I come back to the stadium, I think of that first time that I was there, or to the United Center, I think of that first time being back at the stadium. I want our players to feel that and use that as not an intimidation factor, but a motivational factor. We want to play with the enthusiasm of the national anthem and the Chicago fans, and take that into our game plan and have a step up on the other team before the game even starts. And I want vice versa. I know what it's like to be on the other side. It's intimidating. You're hoping your team's ready and not overwhelmed by what they just listened to, and they're not off track on their game plan. So you want to use it to both ways, against the other team, which I know what it feels like, and to our advantage. And that's just something that I'm really looking forward to, hear the national anthem, to feel that feeling, and then resonate it right into our game plan with our team.
I know you've only had this job for a few days and you're just getting settled. Have you had an opportunity to reach out to Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews so far via text or anything?
Nothing yet. I just actually got their numbers last night from Kyle, and you know, that's kind of next on the list. It's been a whirlwind the last few days. I'm really excited to you know, be a part of this organization, and players like that. They're Stanley Cup winners. They're Hall of Fame players, you know, in the future. And you know, I mean, to create a relationship and that we can grow and work together, but also maybe spread the wealth of what they've learned and what they've gone through to the other players on the team is going to be a huge plus for us this year.
We all know that this is a rebuild and it's early in the process. What are the biggest challenges that this presents to you as a new head coach?
I think there'll be different challenges every day. I think you have to be open and ready for change, ready for you know, things to be adjusted. And I think that that's something that I've learned as a coach. You can't say this is the way we're going to play and this is how we're going to do it and that's it. I think that's old school thinking. I think you have to roll with the changes and adjustments and work to the benefit of your team. So we're going to have different style of players, and we're going to have different, I think we can have a game plan, but I think we have to have a game plan within the plan for certain players. Everybody plays a little different. You got a big physical guy or a real skilled guy that's not as big and not as physical, but we can still play the same game plan and just make sure they understand you know, the differences each player is expected to do for us to be successful. So, you know, I think there is going to be ups and downs. I want our ups to last longer and our downs to last lower. And I think that's going to be a key for a winning organization.
D-zone coverage has been a big topic in this town the last several years. Do you have a specific coverage that you would like to play, or are you waiting to see the players you have and you'll fit the system to that?
I think a bit of both. I know there's a couple of different systems that are really good to play. I think what you have to do is, again, like you said, maybe see what our you know, personnel is and how we're built, and really kind of built it towards that, you know, goaltending out. And I think what we have to do is make it an easier job on our goaltenders, keeping things to the outside. And, you know, every team wants to get hard and get people to the net, and I think we just have to get harder to make it happen for them. Make it difficult, and then be ready to transition to the offense. If we can learn to play defense faster, we can use more energy on the offense. So it's going to help. You know, people talk about we're going to be a better defensive team. Doesn't mean you're in your defensive zone all night and you're good and you're blocking shots and that. I think what it is learning to play faster defensively and demanding execution and killing plays and transitioning into offense. And then we have more offensive energy, and it just works so well together. But it's work, and it's a lot of repetition, and that's what we're going to have to work for on day one.
I look back at that Flyers team that you were on, and you know, a lot of stars obviously in that room with LeClaire and Lindros and Recchi, but Brind'Amour, Berube, Tocchet, now you. all head coaches in the National Hockey League. Have you talked to any of those guys about this next jump, about being now the head coach in the NHL?
I've talked to Rick Tocchet many times, and he's been a real good help and influence in my coaching career, and you know, helped me along the way. And we always have good chats when we bump into each other in the rinks. I haven't talked to him recently in the last week or two, but definitely some great guidance from Rick over the years, and you know, he's had some really good success. So love tapping into him and over the summer, because you know, he's kind of gone through that process when he was with Arizona. So you know, similar situation here, and he did a great job there with the younger team and built it up to a real competitive team. So you know, that's definitely someone that you know, I'd love to speak with. I chat with Rod every once in a while. He nice throws a text out there every once in a while, but he was obviously so busy in the last year with a great team that they've built there in Carolina. So it's definitely another resource that I'd love to chat with for sure over the time. And Craig Berube's a great guy. We had such good fun playing together, and same, just keeping in touch with each other. It just feels like we're right back to 2000 playing together again. You know, we just, hockey players have that bond. It's like lifelong. You can not see or talk to each other forever, but you can jump right back into it with one call.
You've had several coaches throughout your 1400 plus games. You've coached now with many, and I'm sure you take a little bit from everyone, but if there were two or three that maybe have you know, been the backbone or you align with most as a coach, who might they be?
I think just communication wise and teaching the game, not just defense, but I think teaching the forwards, you know, what the defense are doing. Like Craig Ramsey was such a smart mind, and he was a smart player when he played, but he was really great, influential, and I had a chance to play for him a few times. And you know, I've kept in contact with him. He's still coaching over in I think Slovakia and running their programs over there and doing a great job. But you know, if I can combine like his you know, thought process of teaching the game, really teaching the game and showing you in practice, and the enthusiasm of a Ron Lowe, like what a great character, great motivator, great coach. Not the X and O's guys, but he knew that, and he was smart enough to have some assistants that did that. So I think, you know, putting guys like that together were great. Like Billy Barber, really close friend of mine, Hall of Fame player from Philadelphia. Same thing, like a motivational guy. You know, he's smart enough to have a guy like Mike Stuthers, real good X and O's guy behind him, because he had that presence of a winner, and he knew what it took to play in a tough market like Philly. So I think you have to have some smarts, some enthusiasm, and some really good teaching aspects in your game to be a good coach these days.
You were a physical player in your career. How would you like this team to bring physicality on a nightly basis?
Well, I you know, I've just watching the Stanley Cup Finals this year. Everybody's talking about, you know, the speed and the skill of these two teams, especially Colorado. But watch how they play. They play hard. They like, you have their star players just stepping in front of guys. So physicality is different for everybody. And your star players, if you can get them to step in front of someone and just bump their hands, slow them down, and they have to go around you and lose their momentum, well, that's going to help your defense break out and get you as a star player the puck back. So just, you know, I mean, just the explaining that to you know, maybe players that aren't as big, get in their hands. You don't have to run them over and put them in the fourth row, but that's okay too. I like that. So we'll have a little bit of both, I think. And I think what it does is we want the puck. So if we want the puck, we're going to have to be physical in different areas, and that means different ways for different players.
What have you seen from Seth Jones' game from afar?
I really remember him. You know, we played against Columbus quite a bit in the past, so I've seen him more there than I have here this year, because I think when we played them, he might have been out with COVID this year for one of the games at least. But what a great player. And you know, growing up in a professional lifestyle, you know, with his father obviously helps. And, you know, he's got that probably pro aspect demeanor in him. And he's got the frame as a big, rangy defenseman that can skate the puck and lug a lot of minutes and shoot the puck. And, you know, I think that's somewhere where we really have to make sure his confidence level is on a high. We want to, you know, I mean, like you're watching like a Makar, and I'm not trying to compare them. I'm just saying like the confidence that he is given to play his game and make sure he doesn't do too much in the trouble areas that could put you in danger, but to use your strengths and joining rushes at the right times, not every time, and that just gives you more energy to play a lot of minutes in the crucial situations, because that's what he is. He's a number one defenseman in this league, and I'm really excited to work with him.
Last one. What do you hope the identity of this Blackhawks team will be under you?
Kind of what I said before, I think, you know, just we want to play with energy, some heart, and then add the skill level that we have into that. So if I can vision this team playing with the passion of our Chicago fans with that national anthem and starting the game like that and learning how to sustain that energy and that buzz all the way through a game, which is a lot to ask for, but we'll take steps of getting there, that's what I would really love to see.
Excited for this journey, Luke. Good luck.
Thank you
really
very
appreciate
much.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
So again, that same demeanor that we saw at the press conference was on display in that 15-minute interview. I loved, and you asked the question, had he talked to Jonathan Toews and Kane yet? And in our conversation, he got their cell numbers on Tuesday night from Kyle. But it was priority number one. And also Seth Jones in that conversation asked him about D-zone coverage. He wasn't going to commit to a specific style today, but said he would consider the type of personnel he has. And then you're saying all pretty much all the right things. Yeah. Anything else that jumps off the page that you heard from Luke today?
Well, I actually like the fact that he didn't commit to a defensive zone structure yet, right? Because I feel like you kind of have to adapt to what personnel you're given. Like sometimes the Blackhawks in previous years, they've gotten themselves in trouble trying to fit like a square hole into a round peg, right?
Yeah.
And so I think if you don't have the personnel to run a specific style, then maybe change up the scheme, right? Like try to fit the scheme. So I think the challenge for Luke is going to be maybe in the long term, he's going to want to run this style, but they don't have the personnel to run that yet. So they're going to have to kind of lay the foundation of maybe just play a different style for now. And then when they do get the personnel, that's when maybe you start to tweak things when the Blackhawks are ready to be competitive again. So I actually like the fact that he didn't really commit to a style of play yet. It was more so the types of players that they want. He's going to be working with the organization. So that was my biggest takeaway when talking about, because we already wrote a piece like, what's the defensive zone structure going to be? Are the Blackhawks going to tweak it? And so I like that he didn't commit to it quite yet. He's going to kind of see how his roster takes shape first.
Well, yeah, how many of the NHL defensemen that they had during the last season are even going to be on the roster this coming season? Yeah. It's what, Seth Jones and no other guarantees than that. So definitely very smart not to commit to anything. The other thing that kind of stood out to me is he has this very calming presence about him. He's a guy that seems like he'd stay cool under pressure. But underneath that, I don't know if you guys noticed this, I felt like there was a lot of competitiveness kind of burning in him too. He knows what he's in for, right? He knows this is going to be a several year process. That doesn't mean he's going to enjoy it very much. And I think that kind of underlying competitiveness is going to really serve him well when this team really does start to turn a corner. He starts to make those tweaks to the system that you mentioned, and he kind of gets this team going in the right direction. That competitiveness is really going to help him make that transition from a coach that's in charge of a rebuild to a coach that's potentially in charge of a team that's on its ascendancy. And I think that competitiveness really shone through at times, even though he kind of has that cool guy type of approach to things. I saw that fire under there. It was really interesting to see that during the presser.
I felt like we were talking to the players the last couple of weeks of the regular season when we were mentioning rebuild, and they were always circumventing that and saying, but we think we can win now. And, you know, like, and he was kind of basically saying the same type of thing. I know what I'm in for, but I want to get better every day and I want to win.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not in their DNA, whether you're a coach or a player, to just accept losing, right? But you have to understand that there's kind of a process to getting back to being like perennial contenders again, right? Like they understand that they have to, next year and the year after, are probably going to be preaching developmental years, right?
And there are no shortcuts to that success too, which...
No question. Yeah. Especially when it comes to developmental aspect. You can't rush, you know, we've seen it, we've talked about it too with like Kirby Dach all the time, like he and Adam Boqvist, guys that have been rushed to the NHL level and then they've got kind of thrust into roles that they weren't ready for at the time. So I think that's what you can't necessarily rush. Like it's going to take some time for these younger players to. And the other thing I'll say too about maybe his identity is because he's a very calming influence, it feels like he's not going to get too high or too low during some of the trying times. Mm-hmm. And even when the Blackhawks are competitive again, right? Like sometimes you do want a fiery coach to really get the most out of a player, but that coach typically has a short lifespan. Mm-hmm. It seems like Luke Richardson will have, he's the type of personality that will have a longer lifespan as a head coach, and especially with the Blackhawks as they embark on a rebuild.
I also think his real life experiences are part of the reason why we're seeing this calm demeanor when we're talking about hockey and rebuild. You know, he admitted in his radio conversation with WGN on Wednesday morning, and he alluded to it in the press conference on Wednesday, that his daughter, Darren, committed suicide 11 years ago. And they don't avoid the topic. They've been really proactive in mental health awareness. He was wearing purple. His wife, Stephanie, was wearing purple. Mm-hmm. Happens to be Darren's favorite color, but it's also the same color for mental health awareness. And I think, you know, the fan out there who is trying to, you know, find a reason to still kind of hang with this team or whatever, appreciates the realness that an individual like Luke showed on this day. It can't be easy to discuss, yet they weren't turning their back on it or pretending it didn't happen, and felt that, you know, even in the platform he has, being named the 40th coach in franchise history, that they're still going to talk about something that is very important to their family.
Yeah, and it's informed his process and his approach to basically everything, whether it's hockey or whether it's life. And I think that that really shone through at the press conference today, saying how important it was for everybody in the organization to kind of be with him and his wife during those tough times that he had in the aftermath of his daughter's death. And it was really it was just fascinating and really humanizing for him to kind of show that to Blackhawks fans. And these guys are, you know, they're human beings at the end of the day, right? And he really seems to buy into the value of being there for each other and really caring about kind of the mental well-being of his guys and everybody in the organization. And it all comes from that life experience. And that was a really touching part of that press conference, a really great moment to kind of show who Luke Richardson really is. Aside from being a hockey coach, he's also a father and a husband. And that was a great thing to see. And I'm really glad that he addressed that and really showed the ways that that impacts the person that he is off the ice, and also the way that he's going to approach building the culture of this team.
Yeah. And I feel like it's another way that he's really going to be able to relate to a lot of these younger players that, you know, one of the things he said in his press conference was he was shocked by how many mental skills coaches that Chicago has. And like, you can tell that that was a priority for him, and making sure that they have a stable environment, that if guys are struggling behind the scenes or whatever it might be, like, hockey is stressful both on and off the ice. Like, you know, he's going to probably have an open door policy, and he's going to want to initiate these, you know, tough conversations if guys are struggling behind the scenes. So I think that's another way that you look at his playing resume and coaching resume, but also on a human level, he's going to be able to relate to a lot of these guys from that perspective.
You also understand how he connected with Kyle Davidson and the hockey ops guys. He talked about how, you know, the first meeting was 4.5 hours, didn't seem that long. The next day they met, and there was dinner afterwards, and they watched the Stanley Cup final game. And he was able to kind of share his thoughts in real time. And then there was the third meeting the following morning. And in my conversation with him, asking him what the identity of his team was, it's a lot of the same words that we've heard from Kyle since he took over as general manager, the speed factor. And then the one thing that came up with Luke was playing hard. He goes, you know, I asked him specifically, you know, you were a physical player. Obviously, the league has changed, but he said, if you watched the way those teams played, and he said, and he used Nate McKinnon as an example, he said, when you see Nate finish a check, that means something. Yep. Or you slow somebody down a little bit, that's going to make it easier on the blue liner. So there's going to be that that edge that I think he likes to bring. And then he brought it up a few times, you know, and how this whole thing comes full circle. 1987, he starts his career as an 18-year-old. Here at Chicago Stadium as a member of the Maple Leafs. And, you know, how that night went and how the organ got him going, and now he's going to experience it at the United Center. It's that's a pretty cool little little asterisk to the Luke Richardson story.
Yeah, it really does feel like it came or it's coming full circle. And I think obviously fully understanding that there are going to be some difficult times in the short term. I think it's going to mean more once maybe Luke Richardson really sees this through. And then, you know, the United Center is really lighting up for playoff games again. And you talked about like that will be an advantage to him, not necessarily an intimidation factor when it comes to opponents. So yeah, it was cool for him to kind of share that part of it and basically just rounds out the fact that now he's going to be here as a member of the Blackhawks.
It would be really fascinating to watch a hockey game with a guy who's trying to become the head coach of an organization, right? All the little things that he would notice that we would all potentially miss. I mean, Pat, you've had that experience of watching games with players when you do pre and post game shows, and it has to be just fascinating to see the way that they're able to kind of diagnose and break down those plays. So needless to say, that would have been a room I would have loved to have been in. I'm kind of envious that Pat's gotten to do things like that before.
So let's transition into some of the other things that need to be addressed here. Derek King and his future with the franchise. We heard from Kyle Davidson in the presser for Luke say that they're working on something. They can't fully announce it as of yet. Now, we know Derek lives with his family still in Rockford. You know, I would assume that it could be a role with Rockford. I don't think it's going to be head coach because I think that would have already been done.
Yeah, and the fact that Anders Sorensen did a really nice job with Rockford, like Anders is really good with the developmental aspect of things, so I feel like they definitely don't want to take him away from that role. But it is this kind of awkward, you know, situation where it was Derek's team in Rockford, and then he kind of got plucked from there to coach the Blackhawks, and now he's kind of left without any gig. And so I do feel like, even when Derek mentioned, like, he never moved his family to Chicago, like, when he got the interim gig. Like, so the fact that he still lives in Rockford, and I feel like he's really endeared himself to the organization. I feel like it's mutual, too. Yeah. Like, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that is just going to be, like, feel disrespected and want to go, like, maybe an Andrew Brunette type situation where he didn't get a shot at the Florida gig, and now Andrew's going to go somewhere else, right? Like, it feels like Derek actually really likes being part of the organization. So mm-hmm. I would be surprised if he isn't back, whatever that role might be. I feel like he is going to be back in some capacity because Derek definitely likes being with the Blackhawks just as much as the Blackhawks like him having him around.
I definitely feel like a front office type gig would be really good for him. Like you mentioned, I don't think he'll be the head coach in Rockford again, but to be that kind of conduit that kind of is involved in the player development process from a front office perspective, I think would really be perfect for Derek King. I think his personality and his skill set would really do well in that type of role, and maybe put him under Steve Greenberg or something like that. Just keep him in the organization, get him
Jeff.
There's too many Greenbergs in Chicago media.
Not our fellow sometimes Steve Greenberg.
John Greenberg, maybe?
Yeah.
Mr. Hockey John Greenberg from The Athletic.
I think he'd be perfect in that type of role and kind of, you know, getting that type of setup or front office role set up with him. I think that'd be really good.
And let's be honest, these next couple of years are going to be very difficult. You got to have a guy like Derek around to kind of keep things light, right?
Sure.
So I fully support the decision to kind of keep him around.
All right, so we're just over 1 week away from the NHL entry draft. You'll be in Montreal for that. That'll begin on Thursday next week, Thursday and Friday. Kyle was on Kaplan's Unfiltered show. I was filling in for Cap, and on Tuesday night I asked him, you know, look, we know the no movement clauses, we know Alex DeBrincat and the conversations that have been going on, and there's interest in him, of course, throughout the league. Could we see a scenario where you acquire a first round draft pick in next week's draft over the next week? And kind of like he has all along, he has not closed any doors there. They are keeping an open mind as they look to garner as many assets as they possibly can, as quickly as they can. Even though this is not going to be a deep draft by many experts' thoughts, and the fact that there aren't any, you know, Bedards at the top that are franchise difference-making players, at least, you know, from an evaluation standpoint. So your thoughts on what you heard from Kyle specifically on, going after and making moves over the next week that would get them a first round pick.
Yeah, he hasn't been shy about like expressing his interest in wanting to acquire a first round pick. And I don't blame him. Like when you're embarking on a rebuild and you start listing off some guys that like may or may not be untouchable, then it's like, all right, well, there are really no players of value left to like potentially acquire a first round pick.
Yeah.
And the fact that they do have five picks in the second and third round, like you're not going to want to take away, you know, you don't want to package your 2 second-round picks to jump into the first round. Like you still want to accumulate those draft picks to kind of increase your chances of maybe hitting on more players in the later rounds. So, and Pat, like you mentioned too, like even though there are no like generational talents in this draft, like you could still get an impact type player that might help you down the road. Like might not be a Patrick Kane or a Jonathan Toews, but like you might find a little hidden gem that might turn into a
little
top
Braden
six player.
Point. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a superstar too.
Yeah, but like, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you never know if you're going to find one of those guys late.
Yeah, exactly. So like just because maybe the talent at the high end isn't as elite as some previous drafts and maybe as next year's draft, like you still want to increase your chances of potentially hitting on a player and then also speeding up that development. Like you want to, like next year, like, yeah, they're going to have a couple first round picks, but then, you know, one of them is going to be a later round pick because of Tampa. And so like that player, that developmental process doesn't start until 2023. Mm-hmm. And then like by the time he's in the NHL, it's like 2025. And so like you really want to get players in now and start working with them. So I would actually be surprised if they didn't get a first round pick this year. Like I feel like they are going to, between now and the draft, I feel like they're going to get one, whether it's moving Dallas to Brinkett, Connor Murphy. I feel like Kyle Davidson is really going to try it to get his hands on one.
I, you know, and even if they don't, I call me Jimmy Sunshine if you want to.
Jimmy.
But they have shown a really good proclivity for finding talented players, especially in that kind of second round area of the draft. And they have all of those picks in that second and third round range. I get the sense that, Charlie, what you said is exactly correct. Even if they don't move back into the first round, I am confident in their scouting processes that they'll be able to find a good player in that spot. That being said, they do have those assets to move up for a first rounder, and I don't think that Kyle Davidson's going to be content sitting on his hands. I get the sense he's going to want to make a big splash at the beginning of this rebuilding process, still doing it right, still not trying to take shortcuts, but man, it would be great if they could get back into the first round and get a pick there. I know that Kyle Davidson, you can just see it when he talks about it. He's like, oh, maybe it'll be good. No, he wants it.
And
he
not,
wants it.
And not just a first-round pick, like a higher first-round pick, right? Like something inside the top 12 range. That feels like if you're going to move a guy like DeBrincat, like you better get something of value, right? So not necessarily just like, hey, let's go get a draft pick that might be 28th overall or something. Like it feels like they definitely want to try to get inside the top 15 or top 12.
Yeah, and because, you know, we talked about it last week when we were discussing the draft and the tiers in that first draft, and there are like 3 to 4 tiers in that draft, and it drops off pretty quickly. It's like top 3, 4 to 7, and then there's a precipitous drop there. All right, you're going to Montreal next week, and you're going to be busy. You've got a lot going on. You're going to wear a lot of different hats. I hate to give you more homework.
Oh, boy.
But could you maybe do, like, a poutine review or do, like, wait, James, what, like, a poutine review or, like, what else?
I mean, James Nouveau, clearly I'm French-Canadian, so I'm extremely interested. Any tourism recommendations you have, any poutine, like, scale of greatness you want to develop while you're up there, I'm all ears.
One bite, everybody knows the rules.
This will be my second time in Montreal. The first time I went in 2000, it was January of 2018. It was, like, the first week of January. And it was like one of the worst snowstorms in like Montreal history.
Ooh, okay.
And so like the town was just totally dead. Like we didn't get the full Montreal experience and we were only there for like 48 hours. So I'm very much looking forward to getting a second crack at Montreal in the summer. Draft is going on.
Yep.
Well, on social media, your homework is to bring some of Montreal to us.
Yep.
Okay.
We're going to have to start calling him Charles when
this,
he comes
this
back.
Is really,
you know?
This is going to tick you off.
I have a headache already.
And James and I didn't know how high maintenance you were. I mean, the stuff that was going on behind the scenes before this podcast.
I had to go to the bathroom.
Like, well, you had to be reminded about it, which apparently a 30-year-old man doesn't know when he needs to go himself. He needs to be reminded.
Like, everyone was in place here, and I kind of sat down, and I'm like, man, I guess I just got to power through. And so that's why...
He's a gamer, folks.
All right, I'll add the poutine review to my lengthy list. But it's going to be at the very bottom of the list.
As Kat says, no shot. There's no shot that this poutine review is going to happen. But okay, so no. I'll turn to our French expert on the set. You can explain what poutine is to Tony Gill.
It is essentially French fries that are doused in cheese curds and gravy, and it is one of the most wonderful creations in God's existence. It's awesome.
This is like a lot of stuff going on.
It's so good, dude.
I'm going to need to bring a few probiotics with me.
Okay.
Just as long as when you come back, we're not having to address you as Charles and you're not wearing a beret, you'll be all right.
Does Claire need to go on the trip to remind you when you need to take your probiotics?
She can take all the video of you trying the food. It'll be perfect.
All right. So we've covered a lot of ground here. Luke Richardson is now the head coach. They're probably going to trade somebody for a first-round pick. We still don't have a title sponsor, and Charlie will not be doing a poutine review in Montreal.
There's a lot of disappointment happening right now.
Yeah, well, that's it. We're in a rebuild here, too. All right, so that's going to do it for this edition of the sponsorless Blackhawks Talk podcast.
For now.
For Charlie Romeliotis, James Nouveau, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate us. Don't forget to subscribe. There are a lot of imitators out there. There's only one podcast that you should be listening to for the Blackhawks.
Also, by the way, we got a little bit of a negative review last time because somebody didn't my take for last week, which is totally fine. But they didn't listen to James and I when we said, leave a review if it's going to be a 5-star rating, right?
It's true. You said those exact words.
Unfortunate. Again, sensitive. He's sensitive. Remember that. All right, so that's a wrap again on this edition. We'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast.